This is our second Sunday in Jump Month. And all month, we're looking at this idea of what it looks like to jump and follow Jesus. We don't want to be a people that simply believe. It's important to believe, but Jesus said, come, follow me. And so what does it look like to jump and follow Jesus? And throughout this month, I'm going to be before you confessing one of my addictions. It's been an addiction I've had for a long time, and it's my strange and sometimes unhealthy addiction to nature shows. And as I mentioned last week, I rarely, if ever, intentionally turn on a nature show. It's almost always the result of channel surfing, and I'll just be... a dolphin. And I'll be stuck there. I got to find out what happens to the dolphin, what I can learn about the dolphin. This happens to me all the time. In fact, this happened to me a number of years ago. I was home alone. I was watching TV. Commercial comes on. I start channel surfing immediately, and I'm just... a sea turtle. There was a sea turtle swimming in the ocean. It was a female sea turtle. I know this because the announcer said, it's a female sea turtle. And sea turtles, I don't know if you've ever seen a sea turtle in the ocean. They are so graceful. I've worked on this impersonation a lot. It's just so graceful. But as graceful as a sea turtle is in the ocean is how not graceful sea turtles are on the land. Because the sea turtle swims up and gets up, and it's nighttime, comes out onto the beach, and then it's... and it goes all the way across this huge beach. And towards the back end of the beach, there's some rocks, and it kind of goes over the rocks. And then gets down to the more sand and then starts digging with their big paddle fins. I don't know the official term. And it just kind of digs this big hole and then turns around, lays a bunch of eggs, and then goes... and then leaves. And I was thinking, going, you're a horrible mother. Those little guys are going to have abandonment issues someday. I just know it. And she goes back over the rocks and across the beach and gets into the ocean and just... gone! I was like, huh, look at that. But they kept a camera over where she went. And after a while, the sand started to move. And I thought to myself, could be the wind. But it wasn't the wind because the sand all around it wasn't moving, just the sand right there. And up out of the ground comes these little itty bitty baby sea turtles. And again, I'm a man. I like football, barbecue. They're abundantly cute. I mean, little baby sea turtles are so cute. And if you don't think they're cute, again, you have no soul. And these little baby sea turtles get up and they're kind of squinting at the sunlight. And then they kind of start working towards the ocean. And I was like, look at those little guys go, you know? And they get to those rocks and, you know, they're trying to get over the rocks. And what I'm just... you know, and then they finally get up on the rocks, and all of a sudden, from this side comes these big old lava lizard things, and they start eating all the baby sea turtles. And I'm like, this is horrible. Have you ever talked to a television? I do sometimes, and I did that day because I started yelling at these lava lizards. Hey, back off! What did these guys ever do to you? Isn't enough enough? Stop eating them. And they just keep coming. And these little baby sea turtles. And finally, apparently they're full because some of them got past these lava lizards. And they get out on the beach. And I'm like, hey, take that, you lava lizards. You go, baby sea turtles. Go, go, go. I've never been a cheerleader, but that moment I got really close. Like, you know, I go, go, you can make it. And they're going out and they're on the beach and, you know, just. And then all of a sudden, one disappears. I'm like, what just happened? I was watching a baby sea turtle and then it was gone. It's like, how did that happen? And the camera pans up into the sky. And there are these big old dive bombing birds, and they come down and just take them. And I get down on my knees so I can look up into the TV, because apparently that will help me see where they're coming from, and I can warn them. And it's like, at 10 o'clock, they're coming, and boom, another one's gone. And this is just a sea turtle massacre, and it's killing me inside. I don't know how the nature show people know to follow one particular animal. But they're following this one little guy. You know, and he makes it through the rocks and the lava lizards. And then he makes it, you know, up through this dive bombing bird thing. You know, his brothers and sisters are getting picked off left and right. And he finally makes it to the ocean. And I was like, to go, buddy. And a wave hits him and throws him back out of the beach, and a bird got him. And I was just like, oh gosh. Like, how is that possible? Oh, but finally, this one little guy makes it out into the ocean through the waves, and he starts swimming, and he's just this little itty bitty form of disgracefulness. And I'm so happy. And then the announcer. I hate the announcer. I know you're not supposed to hate people, but I hate the announcer. Because the announcer says, while this young sea turtle has made it into the open ocean, the chances of him surviving to adulthood is 1 in 100. And I was just like, oh gosh. I turn it off and I just sit there and I'm just. And at that moment when my wife came home, we had been married for about 5 months. And she came in, and I must have looked pathetic. Because she just looks at me and goes, Mike, what's wrong? Little baby sea turtles, boom, you know, 1 in 100. My wife has never seriously considered getting a divorce. But I got a hunch on that day. It crossed her mind. That was almost 25 years ago. I still remember that day and what happened to those poor little baby sea turtles. And as I think about those little baby sea turtles, I can't help but acknowledge the fact that that's me. I'm a baby sea turtle. And guess what? So are you. You are a baby sea turtle. Because each and every one of us was created by God to do something. We were created by God to follow Jesus all the days of our lives. We were created by God to make it to the ocean. Those little baby sea turtles were created to get there. We were created to jump and follow Jesus. We were created to go with him wherever he takes us. We were created to go to the ocean. But along the way, as we try to be the men and women that God created us to be, as we attempt to be disciples that follow Jesus, there are lava lizards and there are dive bombing birds that tend to get in our way and hinder our ability to make it to the ocean. And I was wondering about this. Like, okay, what are those things in my life that hinder my ability to be the disciple he created me to be? In the 12th chapter of Hebrews, the author says this, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, Let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out before us. And I start thinking, okay, what are the things that so easily entangle me? What are the things that hinder my ability to be the man he created me to be? What are the lava lizards? What are the dive-bombing birds in my life? And as I was wrestling with it, I thought, consumerism and materialism is one of mine. I would love to stand before you and go, oh, no, I don't struggle with that at all. But I do. I think up here, I can stand before you and go, I realize that my hope is built, as we just sung, on Christ alone. But in practice, a lot of times, my hope is built on what I can provide and the stuff I get. I was with a group of friends a few months ago, and we were talking about what are the things in our world today that hinder our children's ability to grow into followers of Jesus. And we tend to pick out certain, you know, sins and things, but I go, it might just be consumerism and materialism that gets in the way the most. Unfortunately, that's one of those things that is fully acceptable within the Christian church. That's not a big sin. Oh, yeah, that's just what we struggle with. But truth be told, when we put our hope in what we can get, if only I had this, then my life would be better. I'd be safer. I'd be more secure. Isn't that idolatry? Back in June, we did a sermon series going through the book of Micah. And the second week of that series, we looked at the idea of idolatry. And this was the definition we gave to what an idol is. An idol is anything other than God in which we seek security and fulfillment. An idol is anything other than God that in which we seek security and fulfillment. It may be something biblical or good, but it has the power to determine our well-being. We have elevated it higher than God meant for us. If only I had this, then everything. And if that this ain't God, you're talking about an idol. And there are times I think, if only I had this, if only I had more financial security, then everything would be better. Guess what? That's a lava lizard for me. And it hinders my ability to get to the ocean. Anybody that has dealt with addiction or has walked the journey of addiction with a friend or family member is probably familiar with the acronym HALT. HALT stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And what researchers have determined is that when we are in places where we are hungry, physically hungry, when we are in places that we are angry or places of loneliness or we're just exhausted, tired, in those spaces, we are far more prone to slip back into old habits. When we are hungry, angry, lonely, tired is when we become very, very susceptible to dive-bombing birds and lizards. We are. Maybe for you, one of your dive-bombing birds is holding a grudge. I tell you what, you can try to follow Jesus all you want, and if you're holding a grudge against a brother or sister, Hebrews 12 got it right. It's a sin that so easily entangles. One of my dive bombing birds that I recognize in myself is when I get discouraged. You know, when the complaining gets a little louder, or the plans that I had come up with didn't come to fruition, and I get discouraged. And when I get discouraged, I almost stop walking, and I just freeze in that moment. In that moment, I become far more susceptible to the things that hinder my ability to follow Jesus. Maybe the dive-bombing bird for us is a God that is far, far, far too small. We have reduced a God that is great to a God that is petty. Our image of God, and this quote has been attributed to a number of different people, but God created man in his image and man returned the favor. Is we tend to view God as if he treats us like, well, other people treat us or we treat other people. And God is so much more. And when we make God so very little, when we make him equal to us, we are far more susceptible to dive bombing birds and lava lizards. And our ability to be fully devoted disciples of Jesus becomes compromised. So I wonder, what's your lizard? What's your dive bombing birds? What are the things that are hindering your ability to make it? So I was thinking about these poor little baby sea turtles. I thought, what is needed for those little adorable things to make it to the ocean? They're created to get to the ocean, you know? And so what's it going to take? And I came up with a phenomenal plan for the little baby sea turtles. We need Uncle Sam to step up. Follow me here. This is a foolproof plan. We need the army. We need the army to secure the beach. You know, the army to surround the beach. You know, they can do this. I was a history major. I know this to be true. They can secure the beach. And then we need the Marines. The Marines, because I know that the Marines can, you know, take things on the beach. And so the Marines can go with the little baby sea turtles across the sand. They can do this. And then we need the Air Force. I've thought about this too. The Air Force to patrol the skies above the beach to make sure that those dive bombing birds aren't going to be getting down there and getting the baby sea turtles. And then we need the Navy. The Navy. To create little bitty submarines that can go alongside, so the 1 in 100 thing doesn't is a 1 in 100, it's lots more, you know. This is a great plan. Ain't gonna happen. But as I was thinking about this harebrained idea of protecting little baby sea turtles, I thought, it's exactly what I need. This is exactly what I need. In the book of Ecclesiastes, and this is on the cover of your bulletin, it says this: two are better than one. There's a better return for their work. If one falls down, the other can pick them up. But pity the one who falls down and there's no one to pick them up. Two people together can keep warm. But how can one person stay warm alone? One person can be overpowered. One person can be overpowered by the lava lizards. One person can be overpowered by dive bombing birds. But two people can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. We need other people journeying with us if we're going to make it to the ocean. There's that wonderful phrase, and I've said it multiple times, that a relationship with Jesus is indeed private, but it is indeed personal, but it's never intended to be private. A relationship with Jesus is personal. It was not intended to be private. We need other people with us as we journey. Two are better than one. In the 10th chapter of Hebrews, the writer puts it this way: and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another all the more as we see the day approaching. We need other people. We need people that come alongside us and journey with us. If you think you can make it alone, go watch a nature show on baby sea turtles. You might not even make it to the rocks. Or you get out there and you see everything going on and the carnage around you and you just lose heart and you give up. If you try to do it alone, you will not make it. Okay, let me be fair. I can't speak for you. I'll speak for me. I can't make it. There's no way I can make it. I need you. I need people in my life if I am going to be the fully committed disciple of Jesus. I can't do it alone. I was so aware of that this week. I was getting discouraged, and Ryan Lee, God bless Ryan Lee, and I think he's back helping with kids this morning. He's came along with me and just encouraged me at just the right moment. And it was all I needed. On Friday, Friday's my day off, and it's a day that I try to practice Sabbath in a very intentional manner. And one of my Sabbath practices is to go over to William Jessup University, because on Friday morning, they have chapel at 9:30. And so I will go over there and kind of sneak into the back and sit there, and it allows me a time just to worship. I get to hear different speakers, and it's just a time of encouragement. And when I was there this Friday, I was so encouraged because we start singing a song that I was not that familiar with, but all of a sudden I go, oh, that's exactly what I needed to hear. And there was a bridge in the song. I just said this, oh, how great your love is for me. How great is your love? Oh, how great is your love for me? Oh, how great is your love? And it was just this bridge repeated over and over again. And it was exactly what I needed to hear that morning. And had I chosen to stay home alone that morning, I wouldn't have heard that, and I needed to hear that. I needed the community. I needed the body of Christ to surround me so that I could continue moving forward that day. If I'd have been in that lonely place, it wouldn't have worked. I needed the people of God that morning. I've read this little story to you before, but it bears repeating. 2, Workman's Compensation Claims Department. From Mr. Joe Blattner, date September 12, 1986, regarding workman's comp claim, date of loss August 15, 1986. Gentlemen, I am writing in response to your request for more information concerning block number 11 on the insurance form, which asks for, quote, the cause of injury, wherein I had written, quote, trying to do the job alone. You indicated a need for further information, so I trust the following will be sufficient. I am a bricklayer by trade, and on the date of injury, I was working alone, laying brick around the top of a 4-story building when I realized that I had about 500 pounds of brick left over. Rather than carry the bricks down by hand, I decided to put them into a barrel and lower them by pulley, which was fastened to the top of the building. I secured the end of the rope at the ground level and went up to the top of the building and loaded the bricks into the barrel. I then pushed the barrel off the top of the building, loaded with bricks. I then went down and untied the rope, holding it securely to ensure the slow descent of the barrel. As you will note, on block number 6 of the work comp claim form, I weigh 145 pounds. Due to my shock at being jerked off the ground so swiftly, I lost my presence of mind and forgot to let go of the rope. Between the second and third floors, I met the barrel coming down. This accounts for the bruises and lacerations on my upper body. Regaining my presence of mind, again I held tightly onto the rope and proceeded rapidly up the side of the building, scraping my side as I went up. I did not stop until my right hand was jammed into the pulley. This accounts for my broken thumb. Despite the pain, I retained my presence of mind and held on tightly to the rope. At approximately the same time, however, the barrel of bricks hit the ground and the bottom fell out of the barrel. Devoid of the weight of the bricks, the barrel now weighed about 40 pounds. I again refer you to block number 6 and my weight. As you may guess, I began a rapid descent. In the vicinity of the second floor, I met the barrel coming up. This explains the injuries to my legs and lower body. Slowed only slightly, I continued my descent, landing on a pile of bricks. Fortunately, my back was only sprained and the internal injuries were minimal. My ankles will heal well, I'm sure, and the break in my right foot has been x-rayed and shows only a hairline fracture. I am sorry to report, however, that at this point I lost my presence of mind and let go of the rope. As you may imagine, the empty barrel came down upon me with a vengeance, and thus the explanation of the 235 stitches on my scalp and back. The concussion was mild, and my memory should be fine in a few days. I trust this answers your concern regarding what I meant about, quote, trying to do the job alone. Please be well assured that in the future I will endeavor to share the workload. Doing life alone doesn't work so well. The scriptures say it over and over again, that two are better than one, and we need one another in order to make it to the ocean. Otherwise, we're just like those baby sea turtles, on their own against lava lizards and dive bombing birds and whatever is in the open sea. But with help, we can make it. So here's the question for us this morning. How are you going to be intentionally surrounding yourself with people as you jump and follow Jesus? One of the ways that you'll hear me say over and over again, 3, 2, 1, we talk about it often here. We should be able to identify in our lives 3 people that we're already in relationship with, that are currently not following Jesus, and our job with those 3 is to encourage them, care for them, love them, learn their story. And if they ever want to know your story, you're willing to tell them. Who are those three? If you're a regular attender here, I should be able to go out to you this morning, right where you're at, and go, who are your three? Would you be able to name them? You have the opportunity to be the person that's walking along somebody that needs somebody in their life. Identify two people that are currently following Jesus that you are mentoring, that you are discipling, that you are building into. Those two people need you. They need you in a big way. Otherwise, they're the baby sea turtle going on their own across a huge, huge beach. Who are your two? And again, parents in the room, if you've got children, you've got twos. They need you intentionally in their life. But there's one more way I would love to talk about how we surround ourselves with our people. And for that, I'm going to need Justin to join me up here. So if you don't know Justin, Justin is the director of discipleship and assimilation here at Community Covenant Church. And so, Justin, I need a role play with you for just a moment. Yeah, I'd be skeptical too. So hey, it was almost as good as the baby duck flapping, but okay, so let's say 20 minutes from now, we're out in the fellowship hall area, and I want to come up to you and say, hey, you're the director of discipleship and assimilation. I've just heard this really fantastic sermon about the need to be surrounded by other people. How can I, I'm fairly new to this church, how can I get in relationship with other people?
So first I would ask them what church they just came from and who was preaching. I'm sorry, I have to get them in when I can. I love It was wonderful.
I'd like to introduce you to Justin. He used to be the director of discipleship and assimilation.
Shortest job ever. So I would say if you ran into me in the lobby in about 20 minutes, I might be standing next to a table with some sign-up sheets on it, and I might say, I think it's imperative. And when I say imperative, I mean absolutely 100% imperative that if you are going to try and plug into the life of the body of Community Covenant Church, you need to find a small group. You need to find a small group of people who are moving in the same direction. And when I say that, I don't mean the same place in life as you. I'm not talking about, hey, if I'm a young married person, I need to be with other young married people. If I have small children, I need to be with a bunch of other people that just have small children. I mean, all of us should be moving in the same direction across the beach toward the ocean and really toward the gospel. And so that is all of us together in community, and it's significant. So I would say, hey, here's a sign-up sheet, and there are small groups that are launching in a few weeks, and we would love to see everybody be part of one.
So if I've got kids,
yes.
If I've got kids, do I need to find a babysitter for every time I'm going to go do small group?
No. No, so one of two things will be happening. We'll have groups listed that are super kid friendly, which is ages from zero all the way up to as old as you want to bring them. Which by the way, you do have kids. Just want to point that out because you said if. I just want to remind you.
I'm trying to.
Okay. But if you have children, bring them with. I'm a firm believer. We're trying to lead groups that have kids, not just being washed in another room, although sometimes it's necessary when we have little ones, but participating in the meal, participating in life together. I mean, if we're making disciples, it starts with our little ones, and when they see us living life together, they see us building community together, they see us in those groups, so important. So better not to get a babysitter and leave your children at home, but show up with them.
What if this whole Christianity, faith journey thing, I'm not sure where I am on that spectrum. So do I need to get things all in order before I become part of the small group?
No, absolutely not. If you do that, you will never, ever, 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 ever join a small group. All of us are getting our stuff together. All of us are getting our acts in order. All of us are learning. If you ever stop learning as a believer, as a follower of Christ,
you're not doing it right. We're always in the place where we need to learn and grow with one another and encourage one another along the way. So, no, having everything in order, knowing all the facts, knowing deep doctrinal things or weird Greek words, not essential. In fact, probably won't even come up.
If they do come up, is that a good place for them to come up?
Yes. I was referring mostly to the weird Greek words, but I mean, unless we have Greek people bringing food. I mean, all of those questions are, it's a great place to discuss things that come up out of the Bible, out of things you may read or hear otherwise, and a great place to discuss and a safe place that allows for us to answer and have discussions and share, be vulnerable, be known.
I'm glad you said that because I'm going to come right back to that in a moment. So right outside the office is a table that's been set up. Justin and maybe a few other people are going to be out there right after the service. If you're already in a small group, great. This is good news. If you've been in a small group before but haven't been for a while, hey, great time to come back. If this is something that's brand new to you, I'd really encourage you to try it because I got news for you. You try to do it alone, you're a nature show, just like I am. If I do this alone, I'm a baby sea turtle, just straight out of the nature show. And that's not what we want for any of us. So I'd really encourage you. So thank you, Justin, for being out there. And you can ask him all kinds of questions. And I am going to ask, at the end of the service, if he's in here, let him get out there, because there are going to be people that need to get to him at that table. Many of you know that a week and a half ago, I flew up to Washington to take my youngest daughter back to school. And you'd think I'd be better at this by now. I have one daughter who just graduated from college, you know, and I've taken Madison up there a handful of times, and she goes to Eastern Washington University, and so on. Wednesday, we flew up to Western Washington, because it's a whole lot cheaper, and then Friday morning, we drove the 4.5 hours to Cheney, Washington, and got her moved into an apartment. No more dorms. She's living in an apartment for the first time. So we got her moved into an apartment, and then the two of us got into her bedroom and set to assemble her IKEA bed frame. After at least 3 significant structural errors, we got the bed frame finished. And then we put her mattress on the bed frame, and the two of us just collapsed on the bed together. And we were laying there with our heads on the pillows, and I just kind of rolled my head over. I looked and I said, "I love you, Mingo." Which isn't a rare thing for her to hear. She hears that I love her often. And we sat there, and she just grabbed my hand, and that didn't help. So here I am with my little girl, little baby sea turtle, and my 20-year-old little baby sea turtle. And I rolled my head over, I looked at her, and I said, "Mingo, there are 3 things I want for you this year." Interestingly enough, none of those 3 things had anything to do with a grade point average. I expect my kids to be diligent students, but that doesn't fit in the top 3 of what I wanted for her. And I shared the first thing, and then I looked at her. This is the second thing I shared with him, and I'm not going to share with you the first and third. But I said, "Mingo, I am praying that you will allow yourself to be known at Resonate." Resonate is the name of the church she goes to on campus, and I am so thankful for that church community. But I said, "Mingo, my prayer is that you would have the courage to allow yourself to be known at Resonate. Beyond, you know, the friends that you have outside of church and such, that you would have the courage to allow yourself to be known in that community." And we talked about how we are both prone to put up some walls, you know. "Yeah, I want you to come close." You know, we can do that, but God, that you would have the courage to allow yourself to be known. And I pray that every day for her, along with number 1 and number 3, but that my daughter would have the courage to allow herself to be known. It's the same prayer I have for you. That you would have the courage to allow yourself to be known. Some of you have been in a small group forever, but you've still got significant walls up. You know how to play the small group game. You're good at it. You've been working at it for decades. Maybe it's time for you to allow yourself to be known and allow somebody in your group to be known. Or maybe this whole church Jesus thing is newer to you. I pray the same thing for you that I pray for my youngest daughter, that you would have the courage to allow yourself to be known. Because two are better than one. There's a better return for their work. If one falls down, the other can pick them up. But pity the one who falls and has no one to pick them up. Two people can stay warm together, but how does one person keep warm? One person can be overpowered, but two people can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Would you pray with me, please?